X-Men was actually based off of, I don't want to get too far into it, but it was based off of the civil rights movement, right?
Okay.
And Professor X was Malcolm X. No, Professor X was Martin Luther King, and Magneto was Malcolm X.
Okay.
So they both. The things that I consider priority shifted. As I was younger, my priority was kind of was centered around me and my like enjoyment of life. Like when you're young, it's like YOLO. You only live once. Have da da da. And as I got older, my priority came my career. Like, okay, I want to be a. Welcome to the Fine Time Podcast. I'm your host, Gabe Blair.
And I'm your host, Sam Blair. And today, let's
find time.
All right, man. So we had a hiatus. You know, we was out trying to figure some things out. And, you know, here we are back in the full effect because I know there's some people out there that enjoy it, you know, what we're creating, what we're making, and the movement that we're putting together. So I feel like it's really imperative that we use the momentum and use the motion to keep this train going.
I'm right there with you, man. For real, before we even get into all the good stuff we're going to do, and what's been up with you, man? Catch us up. I know it's been about a week or so since we found time, but we finally found it. So let's go ahead and catch each other up a little bit, and then we kind of get into what we came here to do.
Okay. So for me, let's see, catch me up about a week. So I was with the little man, you know, he was out on a spring break, you know, just kind of running around Florida, doing our thing and just getting him more acclimated to just being in a space of life where he can have agency over himself and his decisions and really like kind of become the person he wants to be. And I'm talking about my son. Just anyone that doesn't know. And I think on top of that, also, like, really perfecting my craft when it comes to what I do professionally and perfecting my craft, or not even perfecting a craft, but being able to identify the opportunities that are going to be beneficial for me, you know, like 5 years from now, instead of just focusing on what I could do today that'll help me for tomorrow.
Gotcha.
Life is always evolving, and if I can't see the bigger picture, then I'm always going to be where I'm at.
So you look like you got some long-term focus, long-term plays that you gearing up and getting ready for.
100%.
Got you. Well, I had a, I'm right there with you with the little ones. You know, I got two little ones, Jordan and Bob, and
right.
And Jordan is heavy in the volleyball. We've been traveling. I feel like. If you know anything about amateur sports and how much you got to travel, I'm familiar with that for basketball, but not so much for volleyball until this year with Jordan. And I feel like every weekend we're traveling about 6 to 8 hours to a new city to play some volleyball somewhere. This past weekend, we were in Louisville, Kentucky.
It's dedication.
Yeah, we've been in Louisville, Kentucky for like the third or fourth time in the past couple months playing out there. And it's again, I'm new to the volleyball scene, so it's something called the Java World Cup or something. It's like some big-time volleyball tournament. And I will say that volleyball is a very entertaining sport, and once you really start to understand it. And volleyball is a little bit more organized than basketball overall, to where this tournament that we were at, it literally had over 150 courts set up inside a convention center. And you go inside that gym. And it's literally like just volleyballs on volleyballs on people on everything lined up row by row by row. I may even show a video of it when we put the podcast up. But it's pretty cool to see it. And actually, the way they do it is you got your like younger players, you're like 8-year-old, and you got your 18-year-olds. And college coaches can't really talk to the. I think if you're like 14 or 15 or younger, college coaches can't talk to you. But if you're older, they can. Right. So seeing, I'm seeing all the college coaches in volleyball at this event. It's pretty cool to see how big volleyball is. So that's kind of the main thing I've been doing lately is just kind of keeping up with that. And then my little man, Bob, he's just bobbing. He's just doing his little Bob thing.
Bob. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now Bob's a guy, man. Yeah, I'm glad that him and Raj got some time to hang out the other day. So.
Oh yeah, we did. We went down your way for volleyball down in Florida, and we got invited to IMG. Right. It's a little prospect camp to IMG. They looking at my daughter in volleyball, and we went down there to Bradenton, Florida. IMG campus is spectacular. I mean, if you are a athlete, if you are a person who just wants to spend all your time playing sports and doing the performance and nutrition and the player development and the games and all that, IMG had everything, and they took us on a tour, checked everything out. It was pretty cool. To be honest, the real deal about it to me personally is that, as special as IMG is, right, if you ever played in college, you know how the bells and whistles can wow you. And one thing I really did like about IMG is their academic curriculum. Even though they put a heavy focus on sports, they got a lot of really good academic stuff there. One thing I didn't like about IMG, and I mean, if you research it, I'm sure you can find it, is the price tag to go there if you're not on any type of scholarship, which it's some people that can pay it, I'm sure. But the way my bank account set up, I ain't got the IMG tuition. And I would ask anybody to guess, just like a random guess, how much you think it costs to go to IMG?
Yearly?
4 year. How much do you think it costs to go to IMG?
4 years.
For 1 year?
1 year. I say 60 grand for a year.
Ooh, that's a ticket, right? That's,
yeah.
60 grand is how much it costs to go to Columbia University the last I checked, and that's like one of the highest costing schools in the country, college wise.
Like Columbia, New York.
Yes. So, are you ready for how much it costs to go to IMG for a year? If you're just paying the regular rate, if you're living on campus, $107,000
a year. Where's that money going?
Well. Good, funny you ask. They got dorms.
107 is not a small order, dog.
$107,000. All, like, that's going to be your final note paid to go to IMG, based on my information, if you are just going there.
You said for 1 year.
For one, no, this ain't 4 years. I'm not saying 4 years. To go to IMG, one year.
Is one.
But. And one thing they did say, and when I was there, and they was really clear about this, is we are a for-profit institution. They let you know they're here to bunk you over the head. They're not over here being like, hey, look, this nonprofit, we just trying to break even.
No. No kumbaya over there.
Right. Unless you're like the five-star athlete who's coming in to kind of bring eyeballs to the facilities and to the campus and whatnot, you're probably going to be paying, probably not 107, but somewhere around there, but that's still a lot. But overall, it's a very nice place. They got the top state-of-the-art for high school, everything, but their price tag is slapping. So my child may not be going there right now. We got to pay that. But, I mean, it was a good experience to see what they had to offer to see. Just all the things out there, I think it's pretty cool. She's in eighth grade right now. It's pretty cool that a place like that is interested in her skills and her potential. So that's what I've been doing the past couple of weeks, is just traveling for volleyball and enjoying life a little bit.
I respect it, man.
So, speaking of that, where I'm at in Tennessee, just recently we had a solar eclipse. And I want to say,
did it cross you guys? Did it cross over?
It did cross over where I was at, but for some reason, like a couple hours before it crossed, it started raining, and the clouds were abundant, and you could not see anything in the sky, pretty much, for like 4 to 6 hours. During the solar eclipse, and you couldn't see anything. We didn't see it, but it literally did cross over us. And we were all excited for it, but we kept looking outside and all we seen, it was storm clouds. And did it cross you where you were at in Florida?
We got about 75% of it. So imagine a circle is like this, and about this much of the circle was covered. So you still had this little portion back here of the sun that was showing through.
Yeah.
So it was enough that if you put on those goggles and glasses, you can see what was going on. But that was pretty cool.
Did you
did you
wear the goggles? I mean, do you have to wear the glasses? I know I was.
Oh yeah, you gotta wear those glasses.
So I'm not.
You're staring directly at the sun, right? Yeah. You're staring directly at the sun, and if you don't have the glasses on, the glare of the sun is so like prominent and like over expanding, you actually can't see the actual like sphere. But when you put the goggles on, all you see is the blackness in the background, the sun, and whatever's covering it up to look like that. So that's about how much we saw. So you had this little bit of a crescent moon looking shape behind
Illuminati
it.
Illuminati. I see you putting up the dynasty. All this right here.
Yeah, all right. OJ. All right, man. Here we go.
OJZ. I was joking.
OJ out of here, man. I feel bad.
Remember, I was joking with one of my students or one of my players. I don't remember. But I was like, man, I've never met a person who got their retinas burnt from looking at the solar eclipse. And this was only my...
Man, don't look at it.
And this was only my second one. So.
Bro, look, what's crazy, I'm not going to get into the full story. I'll let other people look it up. But there was a influencer in L.A. I don't know how to explain it. She just kind of went off her rocker. She was like an astrology influencer. She looked at, she was telling us all this crazy stuff that was going to happen for the eclipse. She ended up doing, like, something happened to her husband, then something happened to her kids, then next thing you know, something happened to her, and she was just trying to escape the eclipse. But she just went on, like, this frantic panic and, you know, kind of put herself in a position to where she took the elevator to the upper room. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is she not coming back down?
Oh, wow. And that's all over the solar eclipse?
Oh, bro, yeah. She out of here. And she was really on that type of time.
Yeah. I mean, people get crazy over the weirdest things nowadays. So, I mean,
I feel like they buy into it so much that once you commit to something like that, it's challenging to see the other side because, you know, what is it? Your
circadian rhythm?
No, that's just how you sleep. It's your reactive system. It's
your reactive system.
Oh man, it's at the tip of my tongue. Yeah, it's a reactive system. I want to say it's called your
neural RAS network or something.
RAS. And once you get that like set to something, it's going to consistently look for the outcomes that align with it.
Bias or dissonance. It's like once you kind of...
Cognitive dissonance is something different, but confirmation bias...
Confirmation bias.
So confirmation bias is essentially you telling your brain something's important because now you've been exposed to it. So you consciously don't look for it, but your brain looks for it.
It's kind of like when you buy a new car. And you start seeing that car everywhere. When I bought my Audi, I ain't never seen my Audi until I bought it. And then I'm driving and I see like five of the same color, same rims, everything.
So this is a funny thing about that. So a lot of people don't realize like how strong their brain is. So your brain and your mind are two different things. They're not like one and the same. They just kind of like occupy the same space.
Okay.
Right? But your brain always looks for ways to make itself right. So if you tell it something, it's going to search everywhere it can to be like, okay, this is what we're being told. This is what we're experiencing. What can we see or what are the pieces we can put together to make sure that happens?
Yeah.
So that's what anything across the board. So if you get a new car, it's like, okay, this is my new car. Now this car is important to me. What can I do to notice more of it? So it's like in life. There are opportunities all around you, but we don't pay attention to the opportunities until they're like brought to our attention.
Right.
And then we see them everywhere.
Right.
You know?
No, I agree with that because I feel like as I'm raising my kids and as I'm kind of doing my life thing, I'm very particular about how I say something to my kid because I don't want them to to feel like, and I'll take that back. And once I know that they think they can't do something or can do something, I know it's set. It's kind of like, it's so hard to like make them unbelieve something they already believe. If I tell my son we got to make five shots in a row and we go out there and do, he'll do it until we got to make five. But if I tell him, okay, we're just going to make five, he'll be like, oh, you didn't say five in a row. You said make five. Making five is different than making five in a row. And it's like play out in life, especially with raising my kids. Like, it's very, you got to be very careful with how you're kind of like doing your life thing.
And that kind of brings me to another point that a lot of people don't take the time to understand is your parents, like what your parents tell you becomes your child's inner voice. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So like whatever you speak to them, regardless of how much of an impact you think it has on them, it has a big one because you are like the person that's supposed to guide them through life for how many years.
Right.
Right. So they're going to take what you say as like an absolute truth almost.
Yeah.
They're going to take that and run with it.
No, I mean, that's gold right there because, I mean, I can see it. I mean, when you become a parent, you start paying attention to how your words affect your children. Even, I mean, not even a bad way. It's just like understanding that you say something and it goes into their brain as this is what it is. Like, this is the fact of my life.
Bro, 100%. Yeah. They're looking for safety,
right, you know,
like at that age, they're looking for safety. Cause what is it? Like I've been reading this book. It's kind of crazy. My friend, shout out to Lou. He, his fiance has, the psychology book and it's like abnormal psychology. Right. And, some of the things I've been studying in there are about like the id, the ego and the super ego and how those are all different entities. You know, your id is essentially, the things that you do on a daily basis to keep you going forward, you know, like self-preservation and not doing things to inflict intentional harm on yourself so it can preserve your life. You know, your id is going to do all of basic functions to keep going on. And what people don't realize is your ego is the one thing you need to keep in control, because if you don't, your ego turns inflated and becomes a super ego. So if you can just manage your ego enough, because you need your ego, whether you believe it or not, you need your ego.
Yeah.
Your ego is going to help you become what you want to become. And help you, you know, like get through the day to day, right? But just understanding that it's a differentiation between, you know, certain parts of yourself. And when kids hear things, that goes into a certain part of them that they carry on with them for life.
Yeah. And now that we talked about this in one podcast before, and I think it'll probably be a good topic, like to really spend a whole hour or so on, because I'm probably one of the most particular people about how I talk to myself. And when I think in my head,
man.
I mean, I tell myself, even if I got to wake up early, I make sure I'm not dreading it, because if I'm dreading it, I know it's already going to be tougher than what it's got to be. So if I got to wake up at 5:30 or 6 o'clock and I went to bed at 12, I don't tell myself like, oh man, you got to wake up. I just kind of be like, you're going to get 6 good hours of sleep. So when you wake up, frame it instead of being like, oh man, you only get 6 hours of sleep. Instead, it's like, oh man, you're going to get 6 good hours. And when you get up, you're going to be ready to go.
I like that.
So I always.
So it's like you add that spin to it.
Yeah, I always find myself almost persuading myself to be successful because of how I frame things and say things to myself. And that's just kind of natural.
Dion.
What's that? Right.
Is that he said he's never had a bad day.
Yeah.
He said, I may have had a bad moment in a day, but I don't carry that on until, you know, throughout the entire day.
Yeah.
Because a bad moment, you got a choice. Like, it happens, you deal with it in the moment, and then you let it go.
Right.
And then you can, and then after that, you can turn your day into whatever you want it to be.
Gotcha.
But a lot of people ruminate over things that happen, and then that turns into a bad day, like waking up and saying, oh man, I got to get up at 5. You're right. You're setting the tone that once you wake up, it's going to be a dreadful day.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big stickler on just like how you talk to yourself and just the energy that you bring to the people that you're around, because one person 100%. One person can infiltrate a room with all man, or I can't believe we got to do this, or why they do it like this, and one person kind of like lays that negativity down. Other people who are not mentally strong are going to go with the flow, even if the flow is negative. Like, oh man, you're right. Like, why they do that, as opposed to being like, what's the problem? I ain't hurt nobody, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I'm always on guard against negating negativity and influencing and impacting positivity amongst myself as much as possible.
100%.
Yeah,
and I think that one thing that we got to take into account is conviction and how that's expressed. So just because someone has a conviction in something, it can be positive, but people can have a negative conviction based on what they're experiencing.
Yeah.
So if they believe, you know, through and through, like, this is what's going to happen to me, this is what I am, this is my self-worth, that level of conviction in a negative sense is also infectious the same way it is in a positive sense.
Yeah.
Other people are going to pick up on that, you know, and some people are going to respond and react to it, and other people are going to say, oh, I don't want that person around me.
Right.
And that's really how you have to look at it.
My most impactful or most kind of like prevalent story of conviction happened my first job in the NBA. And I remember it like it was yesterday, because I remember when I started training and I was like, man, I want to do this. Like, I want to do this at the high level. I want to work in the NBA. I want to work for the Miami Heat. I want to, like, I want to be sitting. This is what I said to myself, actually. I can remember. I probably wrote it down, too. I said, I want to go to an NBA game as a person who's working. And as while everybody else in the arena is watching the game and joining as a fan, I want to watch the game and critique a person I'm training to try to help them be a better player. And I would tell myself this every day, and I would go outside in the morning time. I would sit down as if I'm at the arena, and I would just put myself in a stand, and I would watch the game in my head, and I would see, oh, man, okay, we can do this drop step better, or we can do this pump fake better, or you got to read the defense better. Oh, that was a good job right there. And I would just kind of constantly, like, think the game in my head, but kind of do it as a person in the stands who's trying to improve a player. And lo and behold, a couple months or a year later after me doing that, I got a call from a guy I used to work with and play for the Miami Heat. And it was like, hey, I want to be my full-time trainer. And then when I did that, my first day on the job, when I went to a game and did that same thing I was telling myself, I sat in that seat and I had deja vu. I was at the Miami Heat game.
Bro, it's not deja vu.
Listen, I was at the Miami
Heat. Deja vu. Listen, bro, I'm telling you right now. So deja vu is essentially, it's a phenomenon, but it's a lot. It's not as nuanced as people think, right? It's a part of, I don't want to go into the whole spiel of it because I'll go down that rabbit hole. But what I want to say is you created that opportunity because yourself for yourself. And I'm sure that once you had the vision of it, the more you think of it, the more likely it's going to happen. And that's how powerful your mind is. So your mind is always going to try to prove itself right.
Yeah.
So if you're telling it that this is where you are, this is where you want to be, and this is how things are going to play out, it's like, okay, well, what do we have to do to get to that point? And everything is going to line up for you. The one thing you got to do is get out your way.
Right.
If you get out the way and stop playing defense, like, the universe wants to give you what you want. You're the only thing that's creating the resistance.
Right. Well, that's good stuff right there. I think that's just something that you, I can't remember when I learned that. I feel like I've always had that mentality, even in school when I was taking tests. I was like, man, I'm going to do good on this. It's not one test.
That's the law of assumption, man.
It's not one test I feel like I took in high school that I didn't feel like I was going to do good unless I just didn't prepare properly.
Right, right, right. But that's the law of assumption, what you just mentioned. And the law of assumption is it's really simple, but it's really powerful. So whenever you have conviction and you assume that things are going to work out in your favor, they work out in your favor because you don't waver from it. You stand on your square, you stand 10 toes down, and you don't, like, try to flip it or make it into something it's not. It's just really simple. Like, I'm going to get this. I'm going to make it happen. And it's going to be, you know, bigger than I could expect.
Right.
And once that happens, it's like, okay, I knew it was going to happen.
Right.
And you got to live in that space of knowing, of the knowing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Last story about that. I got a good friend of mine who, everybody in the sports world know him, and probably like a lot of common people know him too. I remember him back when he was just kind of starting, but I remember talking to him and all the stuff that he's doing now. I remember him telling me like, yo, like they don't understand. Like I'm about to do this, this, and this, and I'm about to move like this, and I'm about to do this, and I'm about to change the way stuff is doing. And the guy I'm talking about is a guy by the name of Chris Matthews. Now he go by the Lethal Shooter online. It's his little brand.
Everybody know Lethal Shooter,
But I remember talking to him like 5-6 years ago, and he was pretty much telling me like, "Yo, I'm gonna do this my way, and my way I know is gonna work because I believe in it, because I see the roadmap, and I ain't gonna waver from it." And I mean, I remember him talking to me, and I remember him kind of giving me the. For one, he was giving me game, and for two, he was just kind of just spilling out his conviction, and I was just listening to it, and I was like, I don't see it not working.
When somebody's conviction is so strong, it gets you on board.
Right.
But somebody's conviction is so strong, now you are like, I don't want to say a fan, but now you are in the space of, oh, yeah, he going to make that happen. I believe that.
Right.
I believe that.
Right.
And now you know what you do. You're subconsciously bringing in other people to help manifest the thing that you're trying to bring into reality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So yeah, we got off on a little tangent there. But that came. Yeah,
but hey, that's what this for, you know?
That came from the
that's
solar.
What it's about, man.
That came from the solar eclipse. You got anything else about the solar eclipse before we move on?
Nah, man, I'm done. We wrapped it up. Okay. We went down a direction we needed to go, and it landed how it's supposed to land, bro. 2 feet.
Okay. The next thing we want to touch on is, did you see that the government is I guess I would say canceling student loan debt for like the third or fourth time? I mean, I feel like this happened like 2 or 3 times in the past 10 years.
I do too. I don't know if I got any partakes in it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I just want to see something to where everyone understands the level of what this means and also the impact it has. So if they're really going to do it, follow through. But if not, stop bringing it up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because that is like the thing that kind of keeps, it's almost like someone dangling a carrot in front of a horse.
Right.
Like, you're not going to give it to them. You just want to use it so they can keep moving. And if that's what they're going to keep doing is, like, dangling in front of people, like, okay, well, we want you guys to keep moving. So we might cancel, you know, the student loan debt. But if we don't, we'll cancel a portion. Or we'll cancel 500,000 people. And now we'll do 1 million people.
Right.
You know? And I'm just like, all right, whatever.
Well, you know, this is election year. So without getting too deep into politics, typically during election year, a lot of money is promised in order to secure votes. And then once those votes are secured, maybe a little bit is divvied out, but maybe not all of it. So, you know, if you understand politics a little bit and then kind of follow the American political system or just politics in general, you'll see stuff like that, like student loan forgiveness, or even when you've seen a couple months ago, maybe even a year ago, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve was tapped into in order to lower gas prices. And that's something that we
Which one? One Alaska?
No. There's something called the Strategic Petroleum Reserve that the U.S. has. It's like, it's pretty much like, in case of emergency, and we can't...
Right. But I know there's one in Alaska. I don't know where the other ones are.
No, I don't know where it is. I just know, like, that's the term, and that's what it is. It's our
term. Oh, I got you. I see what you're saying.
We tapped into that in order to lower the price of gas for...
Bro, that's so crazy.
So, now, imagine but we this. Didn't refill it yet, though. That's the thing. Like, we tapped into our petroleum reserve in order to lower gas prices, to say like, oh man, look how great we're doing as a country, or as a side, a right or left side. And now, once we tap into it, 4 or 5 months pass and gas has went back up to what it was, and now the reserve is no longer reserved. So
here's the thing. So we have a bigger reserve than people realize, right?
Right.
And just by tapping into the reserve to get whatever we're trying to use from it to like swing whatever narrative, because that's really what it's about. They're never going to use enough of the reserve to where it's depletion. And it's like, yo, I got money in my pocket, but I don't want to spend my money. I want to spend your money. So it's like, we have oil reserves here, but we don't want to use our oil. We want to use your oil. And that's what I feel like is, that's what that whole play is. Because we could probably last a couple, I don't know, like say 50 to 60 or 70 years on our own oil reserves, using it the way we use, because we're like the biggest consumers of fossil fuels and things like that.
Yeah. So, right. So real deal question for you. When you go to the gas station, do you make decisions about what you're going to get after that? Or do you cut back any of your planned expenses based on how much gas is? Or do you just gripe about it a little bit while you're getting it? Or does it not, do you not really, does it not affect you yet? I'm getting that.
So someone once told me, you get what you get and you don't make a fit.
Okay. My daughter used to say that when she was 8. You get what you get, you don't pick
a fit. I'm just saying, bro. Like, it's that simple. It's like, you get what you get. You feel me? Yeah. And you can't sit up here and make a big deal over everything, because a lot of times it's really not that serious.
Right. So my question for that is, because I think that depending on where you are economically in life is going to be dependent on how you respond to gas prices on a regular basis, how you respond to student debt. Pretty much, if you don't have it and you got to come up with it, it's going to be a little bit more pressure for you, a little bit more friction for you. Right now in my life, I go to the gas station. I may be a little like annoyed at, because I got a Suburban and an Audi. I may be annoyed that it's going to cost me like $150 to fill up my 2 cars, but I'm not worried about not having it. There was a time in my life where I was worried about not having it. So every time I went to the gas station, instead of being like, I'm about to fill this up, I'm like, I don't care how much gas it is. I only got $10 for it. So whatever $10 get me, whatever
that's what it get me.
So I'm sure it's a lot of different variants in people's feeling about that. But I think what you said is right. I mean, you get what you get and don't pitch a fit. And if you don't like it, you got a voice. And if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yep. 100%, man. 100%. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah. So, matter of fact, even about student loans, I'll give you my take and my perspective on it. I went to college on a full athletic scholarship. So although I do have a lot of sympathy for people that got student loans, personally, I don't have the real life experience of knowing what student loans feel like. I will say that while I was in college, I qualified or got something like a Pell Grant or something of that extent, to where I thought it was free money. I took it. I splurged. I bought an extra burrito at Taco Bell. I bought the supersized fries. And when I went out, I went to the club and got the top of the shelf drink or whatever. And then when I got done with school, you know, I had like a $3,000 bill I had to pay over time. And I was like, what is this? I thought this was free. And then I had to realize that scholarship money is one bucket. But if you get additional assistance, i.e. Pell Grant, or whatever else that it was out there, I forget all the other stuff it was, you got to pay that back. So the most I had to pay back was maybe like $3,000, maybe $6,000. But I know some people, even in my family, who may be paying back $60,000, $70,000. I don't have experience with that, but I know paying back $70,000 of something that cannot be written off has to be a burden, to say the least.
Oh, man, that's beyond a burden. Because that affects people's livelihood.
Yeah. You know? All right, student loan debt. Let's move on to something a little bit more brightening. The X-Men. Are you a
X-Men 97?
X-Men 97. Tell us a little bit about the X-Men.
X-Men 97. So I personally feel like, you know, this is right down my alley. And I'm sure you're pretty aware of it. Us living off of, what is it? King Bishop Road.
Mm-hmm. What's up, Haseem? King
Bishop Road, man. Going around the neighborhood. Yeah, Haseem Wilson. My guy, one of my best good friends. I talked to him the other day. And every Wednesday, man, we get together and have our little chats about X-Men 97. And
I still got worried for Haseem, like though. Him got into a little scuffle. We were playing football outside on the street, and we got a little scuffle. I think he tackled me on the concrete back in the day, and I ran home, and my mom was like, "What you crying for?" And I was like, "Somebody hit me." And then she gave me a can opener and was like, "Man, you better go back out there and stop being a little punk."
Is that what happened?
I think that's what happened, for
that's
real.
That's what happened? That's what I happened. Remember something different. I don't remember that, bro. That's all right. That's intense,
so,
right there.
Yeah. So I seen, look, I hope you're doing good, but just know we got some history.
Nah, see, I think the last time we was all together, we like played ball or something. Yeah. He was surprised how we was just dunking everything. That was like 01 or 02. That was a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I saw him early in the year. You know, we kind of touch bases like every Wednesday, kind of discuss the show and whatnot. Just because, I don't know if you remember, like, he can draw, like, just as good as me. So,
yeah.
We would, like, collectively come together and start to create our own comic books. And the good thing about this show is they literally picked up at the very last episode of the one from 1997. So, there's, like, no in-between. It's like, they picked up and they added all of the new elements.
So you're talking about
the X-Men.
You're talking about the X-Men show, right? And you're saying that back in the day, it started at one point and it got to, let's just say it got to point B. And you're saying the new show that just came out is picking up at point B and not leaving any gaps in between the transition. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So it's doing that. And the reason this is such a good piece of content, I think, is because the people who enjoy this walk of life or enjoy this space and they can dive into it, it's given the element of everything that you wanted to see play out or everything that you wanted to experience. Now you have the opportunity with everything being updated. So it's no more restrictions, right? So even though it's an animation, it's not the same type of animation we saw. I mean, there's a lot more higher stakes and real life events, like this one last show that's so interesting. So a lot of people don't realize. So X-Men was actually based off of, I don't want to get too far into it, but it was based off of the civil rights movement, right?
Okay.
And Professor X was Malcolm X. No, Professor X was Martin Luther King, and Magneto was Malcolm X.
Okay.
So they both had a goal that essentially were going to lead the mutants, which were quote unquote black and displaced people of color or people of different walks of life. It was essentially to create a safe space for them to allow them to be who they want to be without the fear of repercussion, you know, from the powers that be. And the last episode was one where the community was in their own space, minding their own business, but it was like a massacre in a sense. That, you know, people came in, infiltrated, and kind of destroyed everything that they built. And that kind of reminds me of different things that we had, you know, like the Black Wall Street in Oklahoma, Tulsa, and things like that, that were like thriving communities that we put together. But just because we put it together and we were doing our own thing out the way, people just couldn't stand to see it. And that's why I think this is such a groundbreaking series in the way the stories are being told, because they're really pouring into it. using real life elements and events so people can relate to it without having to reach.
Right.
That's a lot, man. Now I think about it. I just explained this whole thing in such a way that when you say it out loud, you hear it and you're like, wow.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't watch a lot of cartoons. I wasn't really into the fiction or just the fantasy stuff as I was growing up, but I was more of a realist. But even then, X-Men was one thing I did watch, but I didn't realize that was the background of it. Even watching it, and now that I think 100%. About it, yeah, now that I think about it, it does make sense because I think of myself, matter of fact, me watching X-Men, and one of the things that kind of brought me in is that, like, that they were quote-unquote mutants. And to me, a mutant is somebody who has a special gift who doesn't necessarily relate to other people that don't have that gift, but they're still very, very valuable in society. So for me to see that at a young age and know, I felt like I had a special gift when I was young. I still feel like I do now. And it was always something I can relate to, is seeing people that feel like they don't fit in, but they still bring value and pretty much like make it to where the people who are the commoners can exist without any real peril or existential threats.
Listen to this. So we live in a world that's essentially ran by creatives, right? The creatives are the people that kind of have the ideas to build a lot of the things that work in the world. But you have the people who want to control that to have everyone in line so that they can have workers to create the life that they want. So they exploit the creatives. And that's essentially kind of the paradigm that we're in. So it's like you need the creative people, but you also want to confine the creative people and restrict them so they don't get too creative, because they're too creative, then they can think outside the box and figure out a way to get around the power that you guys hold.
Right. No, I mean, the world is a bunch of microcosms being played out right in front of our face every single day.
Absolutely. 100%.
Every single day.
100%, man.
And it's our job to not necessarily break the mold, but just kind of speak truth to power and live your truth. And everybody's different.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody's different, but I will say everybody has got more in common than they do different. And I think a lot of times we are quick to point out the differences, and we're quick to point out how we're different from one another and not realizing that, I mean, we're 98% alike. And why are we talking about the 2% only, you know?
Because that's the 2% is essentially what I feel like that part is part of evolution, right? So people want to be in spaces and be around people that are going to help them get resources, get food, get shelter, and things like that. So if they're with someone who they deem is not on the same level and is so or economic status as them, then it's like, okay, well, we don't want to partake or deal with that because we may need to give up what we already have for the people in those positions. So it kind of changes, you know, some of the narrative.
Right. I was listening to a guy named Thomas Sowell. If you haven't ever listened to Thomas Sowell, he's a legendary economic teacher, an older black gentleman, very, very smart. And he said something. I was listening to it today, and I'm going to try to get it right. He said that I got it now. It came to me. He was like, telling a story about a dog. He was like, there was a dog with a bone in his mouth standing over a lake, like at the edge of a lake. And he was like, the dog seen another dog with a bigger bone in the reflection. So the dog dropped his bone to try to get the other dog that had the bigger bone, and which was his reflection. And he ended up drowning and didn't have a bone. And that dog that he thought had more of a bone than him was only him. It was just a reflection of himself. It just looked like he had a bigger bone. And then he was kind of saying that in regard to like how we constantly live as a society. It's like we see we got everything that we need. We got everything that's going to sustain our life, make us have a great country, this, this, and this. But we see the other person who look like they got more than us. And instead of pretty much being content and satisfied with what we have as individuals, and we're always trying to get the bigger piece of the prize. But as a country, we're always trying to conquer more land and get more taxes and all this stuff. And it always ends in us not having anything because we're trying to have everything. I thought that was a very, very good take on kind of the microcosm of life. So anything about the X-Men?
Nah, man, I feel like that's the space. Yeah. That's the space I'm in.
Okay, let's move on. And what about dealing with life's unexpected events? I know I'm in my late 30s now, and you in your late 30s, and as we get older and we start to kind of understand the words that our parents and our grandparents like used to tell us, because it's kind of coming to real life now. So what are things that you feel like, what does that mean? What's your take on dealing with life unexpected events?
I feel like it's something that you just got to be prepared for. And I don't know, man, like just one of those things, not even just being prepared, but understanding that some things are just kind of out of your control.
Yeah.
You know, and when you make peace, but when you come to terms with the things that are out of your control, it helps you move forward because you won't be able to dictate everything. And I remember like a few years ago when Nana got into like a bad accident and just kind of trying to unpack what that would look like for her life moving forward.
Yeah.
Is one of those things where like, you know, man, like I really hate that. Like and it's not much I can do about it because it's kind of happened, you know? So only thing you can do is figure out how to move forward.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I would say there's some events going on in my life right now on a few different fronts that give me some perspective on life. One being that people don't change much, and
yeah,
it takes a very, very determined person to willingly just change. But typically change comes from one or two things. I think it comes from the fear of this. I think it comes from the fear of losing everything you got. I mean, you got to be rock bottom. Like, that's why a lot of like people who get strung out on drugs or whatever, like they have no lower place to go. Therefore they must make a change or die. Right.
Ouch.
And then I think change comes from the fear of, like not being good enough and being like comparing yourself to other people and trying to like change to kind of keep up with what you think is prosperous or elite or whatever that is. But I got some older people in my life who I've talked to over the past months or whatever, and when I talk to them, they got a lot of wisdom, right, but their perspective on things are the same as they were like 20 years ago. But they still got, I mean, the wisdom that they have is still relevant to this day. But their worldviews are still the same that they had when I was a teenager. So as I kind of see that and understand that, it makes me think, like, do I want to be a person that doesn't change? Or do I not even have a choice? I mean, I just can't change who I am. And not that you want to change who you are, but do you? But sometimes right. I think it's important to be able to upgrade your views and upgrade your vernacular and upgrade your person. And I'm a person that's always trying to be the best version of myself. So talking to the older people in my life who I see are kind of like, I don't feel bad or anything for them. I don't feel like it's not right. I just see it as, I mean, that's very interesting to see that a lot of older people are the same 20 years ago as they are now. They just got a little bit more wisdom, or they just going to tell you the same thing. But I thought that was interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like nothing is permanent except impermanence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the only thing that's going to ever be constant in life is change.
Yeah.
You just have to, whether you like it or not, accept it, because change is going to happen. But the change that happens in most people's lives comes from an event that's usually out of their control.
Right.
And I guess you got to understand that you can't change for, you have to understand what you're going to change for, either a good or for the bad. Because an event that can, you know, change you could potentially be an event that could save you moving forward. But like I said, you have to be willing to, like, step into that space and step into that version and understand that for you, you can't be the same space and be the same person or just continue to do things the way that you want. If you truly want to enjoy your life,
right?
Like, it just doesn't work that way, because change is the one thing that is going to happen. And I don't care what you do or what you get involved with, change is always going to come around.
Now, I think the biggest change in my life personally, and maybe it is for everybody, or maybe not, I think the biggest change for me is my priority change. Like, I didn't necessarily change much about, like, how I say things or X, Y, and Z, but, like, the things that I consider priority shifted. As I was younger, my priority was kind of, was centered around me and my like, enjoyment of life. Like, when you're young, it's like, YOLO, you only live once, have da-da-da-da. And as I got older, my priority came my career. Like, okay, I want to be a basketball player. I want to be able to, like, really be the best at this. And then as I got even older and I got a family, my priority turned into supporting and providing, not just financially for my family, but kind of being a role model and a person who I want my kids to look up to, and can depend on. So as I got older, my priorities changed and shifted. I still want to enjoy my life. I still want to have fun, but it's not the number one or number two or number three or number four. It's more down at the bottom. But I find myself now having fun with the number one priority is supporting my family. That's fun to me. That's something I enjoy being able to do. So when it comes to change personally, I feel like as I got a little bit more mature, a little bit more seasoned, my priority changed, like, more than anything. And my hairline did a little bit too, but mainly my priority.
Nah, I respect that, and I feel like that comes with self-actualization. You know, just being able to see where you are in your life now, and as you progress and moving forward, and you say you want these things in your life, like, there's going to have to be a change, you know, like, certain things force you to change, like having children forces you to change, you know, being married forces you to change, having a significant other forces you to change. Hell, just like loving in a committed way forces you to change. And a lot of times people think they can get these things without the change. And that's where you create the resistance and it's not even a self-sabotage. You just kind of set yourself up for disappointment. And I think that's probably the next topic that I need to kind of dive into, because I've been seeing it a lot lately. And now I'm understanding a little more on what disappointment is and how it actually plays out in most people's lives. Right? But whenever you're going after something that you feel like you want and it is asking you to change, but you want to stay stubborn and be who you are and where you are, you're only going to lead yourself to disappointment.
Yeah. Now, I feel like what is something, one thing at least, that you feel like you've a self-actualization moment that you were like, oh, man, I remember this point in my life where I was like, oh, man, it hit me. I realized this now that I didn't realize this before. And what's something for you that kind of like, is this something that you can like say that happened for you?
Honestly, man, like the birth of my son kind of hit me differently. I mean, it took me a second to kind of get my footing, you know, but I feel like that moment really opened my eyes and my mind in a way that I was just unfamiliar with. I was just really unfamiliar and unaware with. And once I got to put those shoes on and I started walking around in it, I realized, okay, I don't know what's happening here. I don't know how this is going to turn out. I don't know how I'm supposed to proceed, but I have to change if I want this person to have a fulfilling life, you know?
Right.
And that was really the biggest thing for me, is understanding that it wasn't about me anymore. Like, whatever I want, whatever I want to do, it's not about me when I know I got to figure out what's going to set him up for success, or how can I put him in the best position so that whatever it is he's experiencing are going to lead him to like his own self-discovery, you know, and not put him in a space where he has to go through life, you know, in an uphill battle.
Yeah. I mean, that makes, I mean, it's kind of the passing of the torch from me to we. And
yeah,
and most kids now, especially this generation, I think this generation of parents are very, very kind of like safety net to their kids, to where it's like they never have to fall too far before they get caught. So I think as a parent, you definitely turn into the safety net, and you turn into the, I want the best for this seed. And what do I need to do to make sure it grows into its full potential?
Yeah. I feel like there's a level of uncertainty when you know you don't have that support. And it kind of leads you down a road of the unknown. And when you kind of go in the unknown, it forces you to do things and make decisions that can compromise, I don't want to say your integrity, but yeah, it could compromise your integrity, because you got to figure it out. You got to survive.
Right.
And those are the things that change you for your life, whether it's good or bad. Those are the type of moments that can permanently change you for the long run.
Yeah. Now, I think for me, a moment, a self-actualization moment was when I stopped playing basketball. And it's like when you were talking about the X-Men, it was like, it was a show and then it stopped. And once the show stopped, it's like, what comes after that? If you were an athlete, typically, I'll tell you that, but not typically, but for my case, because like my sport determined where I went to school. If I didn't play that sport, I wouldn't have went to school I went to, because I wouldn't be able to afford it. So, and my moment of self-actualization came when I stopped playing, and I had so much of me tied into my sport, so much of my identity, of my purpose, of my worth, of my just my being was tied up in my success in that sport. And when I stopped playing it, it was kind of like, this is the end. Like, you, as you know yourself, is no longer existing. Who are you now? I'm just a regular person. And then to me, that was a moment of like, oh, you're a regular person while you were playing. It was just that you chose to do this. And now that you're done playing, you're still a regular person. You just got to find something else to do. But it almost felt like a failure to feel like you didn't succeed at the sport. But when I kind of took my time, and it took me months, or maybe even a year, to really like come to grips with it, it was like everybody got to stop playing. It don't matter how. It could be a blown knee. It could be a voluntarily I'm done. It could be a retirement, like whatever. Everybody's got to stop playing that sport. But when you kind of grow up and that's all you know and that's what you do and that's what you're tied to, and when you stop playing, there's a void there, and you got to try to fill that void. And my explanation was allowing myself to fill that void with uncertainty, with curiosity, with opening that box that I was in and being like, okay, now you can get out the box. And now you're not just now you're not just an athlete who can only talk about sports and do basketball and do all this stuff. Now you can actually step outside that box and figure out what the world is really about. And that was something, like, for me that really made me curious into started reading books a lot more, starting to, like, talk to people outside of my field and really understand, like, what things were out there. I started asking, like, regular people questions, like, what do you do for a living? Because if you're an athlete, you don't realize that, like, 99% of the world don't make their living off athletics. And it's like, what do they do? And then you start learning and what people do, and it's just as important. It's just as important as athletic. So I think that was my moment of realizing that, like, there's a whole nother world that you hadn't tapped into that now you can tap into with bright eyes and a bushy tail, and just really absorb everything you can from just life.
Yeah, man, these things is going. They growing legs of their own, man. We just diving in there.
Yeah. I'm moving on to a little bit more. Just a little bit more of my speed, anyway. Sports a little bit. First off, I want to touch on the most important thing in sports right now: women's basketball. I didn't think I would be saying that a couple years ago, but honestly, right now the women's game is doing some phenomenal things and with some phenomenal people carrying it, and it's just something to talk about. Well, tonight
it's evolving, man.
Yeah, it's evolving, and part of its evolution is media. It's the ability to capture what these ladies are doing. As I feel like before, it wasn't as much media available to see it. And now when comes media, comes personality, comes getting behind the scenes, and you really get to know people. And it's starting to be really, really fun to watch the women's game. So tonight, actually, it was the WNBA draft. I never thought I would watch the WNBA draft, but I sat there and I watched the first round of it. And me and my family sat there, and the number one pick in the WNBA draft was Caitlin Clark. My daughter says it's Iowa, and I call it Iowa, and she say Iowa. Or maybe it's different. I call it Iowa, and she says Iowa. But whatever, Caitlin Clark from Iowa is going to the Indiana Fever. And when I tell you, when Caitlin Clark got picked number one, my six-year-old son was clapping. My daughter was excited, and my wife was excited, and I was locked in. So that's pretty cool to see the women's game drawing in that much attention. I'm sure they'll put out a graphic tomorrow talking about this was the most watched WNBA draft ever, da 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 da. But it's going in a good direction, and mainly because you're in the film business, so the women's game has a script. It's got a story. And the story is Caitlin Clark is the hero who came to save the day, and Angel Reese is the villain who's going to make you pay for saying anything bad about her. And just that alone is enough for people to be entertained, and let alone it's actually really good basketball that goes on. It's really skilled players. It's really dominant players in a lot of different positions. So it's very, very fun to watch that. one of my favorite players outside of Caitlin Clark is the girl from South Carolina, the big girl. She's about 6'7". She's from Brazil, Cardoza. She got picked, I want to say got picked fourth, and she's going to the Chicago Sky. I just that whole thing was pretty cool to watch them. They got the same music as the guys when they come out. They got, I mean, it was fun watching the WNBA draft tonight for sure.
Yeah. Now I saw some of the highlights, but I definitely saw that Caitlin Clark was the top pick.
Yeah. She came out there and Prada'd out, all Prada, head to toe.
Oh yeah?
She may be the first, I think it was something about her being the first player sponsored or something about Prada. Some little random ESPN fact that they were saying about her and Prada, which I mean, she was, they all had their little drip. It was nice to see. They all had their little drip. Angel Reese, it looked like Red Riding Hood, a nice little hoodie on. Cardoza had a nice little red outfit on. They came to play.
What's the one girl that plays for USC? She a freshman, right?
For USC?
She's putting up buckets, man.
Fluwale. She a little freshman.
Is that her name?
Yeah, Fluwale.
Yeah, she putting up buckets, bro.
She a bucket.
Yeah, I was seeing.
So, staying with the women's basketball, South Carolina won a championship in the NCAA.
Yep.
Do you know who they beat?
Didn't they beat Iowa?
Yep, they beat Iowa in the championship game. Caitlin Clark came out.
Yeah,
Caitlin Clark came out in the first quarter on some like not today, ladies. Had 18 points in the first quarter, came out blazing, and then Dawn Staley made some adjustments. Girls stepped up and they figured it out. They ended up winning, going 38-0 to win it. It may have been 39-0 or 37-0, one of them. But they went undefeated for the season and won the championship. Dawn Staley, the class
act. That's crazy.
Yeah. They went undefeated, won the championship. And Dawn Staley, the class act that she is after the game, once they got the award, I think Caitlin Clark, for just her impact on the game and bringing so much attention to the game. And she's just a class act as a coach, and she deserves all the success, all the accolades and stuff like that she get. She's one of the best coaches in all of sports, and not just women's basketball, but all of sports. So it's good to see her winning. And she's in South Carolina. I mean, I got players at South Carolina playing the men's teams. So it's pretty cool that they're that close to greatness. I got to talk to them and ask them about her as a person and see what I can steal from her as a coach.
That game
was the most watched, if I'm not mistaken, the most watched basketball game in the past 15 years. Right?
Word.
And the most watched basketball game in the past 15 years on like cable networks. So it may have been other like places that had more views, but as far as cable networks, the NCAA men's game had like 15 million viewers. The women's game had like 18 million viewers. So the women's are
okay. That makes sense.
And women are doing their thing right now. It's very, very fun to watch. But I respect it, man. Speaking of the men, do you know who won the men's side?
I saw it. I forgot.
UConn won the men's side.
Oh, yeah. I saw that because I saw Rep Hamilton out there.
Yeah, UConn won the men's side. They won. This is their second in the past 2 years. So they're back-to-back champions. And UConn winning did two things for the game. One is it showed that you can take nine new players, because they won last year, lost pretty much everybody, and got a whole bunch of transfers in, and won again. So you can win in the transfer portal era if you know how to get the right players to fit your system and have a good system. And number two is I did some research on UConn a little bit about their just the way they play, and their offensive system is based on overseas basketball. Their coaches study overseas teams and overseas basketball systems, and they implement the overseas strategies in the NCAA, in the U.S., and you use them. And if you watch them play, the way they run offense, if you like basketball, if you enjoy, like, watching for the love of the game, they play a style of basketball that's just beautiful. They cut, they pass, they're not stagnant. They know when to give up a good shot for a great shot. They put you in so many quandaries as a defense that it's so hard to stop them when they get rolling, because they're a well-oiled machine. So that's fun to watch, and it's good to see that they're doing their thing. And Dan Harrelly is a great coach as well. also in college basketball, I know this ain't your wheelhouse, but there's a new coach at Kentucky. John Calipari I wouldn't say he got fired.
Oh yeah, I know John Calipari.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he got fired. Something happened to where he left Kentucky and went to Arkansas. And when he went to Arkansas, I'm talking about, it was like a shock because nobody expected that. I mean, although he lost pretty early in the tournament, he got upset by Oakland. And nobody expected him to leave, but he definitely left and went to Arkansas. So I'm interested to see how he builds that program. I think Kentucky fans may be a little spoiled because they don't realize that like Calipari bringing in that level of talent. Maybe they don't always do good in the tournament, but like that takes a heck of a recruiter to get that level of talent one and done in every year. And
100%.
And they're going to suffer a little bit behind, like not having him there. But I think Arkansas is going to be Calipari. They're going to represent him as a coach and what he does. So I'm excited to watch them play. Staying in the state of Kentucky, Louisville got a new coach who's from North Carolina, a guy that coached at a College of Charleston, Pat Kelsey. He's been doing great things at College of Charleston, and he's got the Louisville job. Young coach, really good energy, really passionate about his job. He does a good job with building a really good staff and recruiting. I think they're going to be pretty, pretty good in the ACC. So I want to watch out for them. Besides that, man, there's been a lot of coaching changes, but those have probably been the biggest ones so far in college basketball. So that's just something quick to touch on. And while I'm there, I will be doing a spinoff show just to talk about sports and basketball, mainly basketball, but we're going to call it the Basketball Blueprint with Gabe Blair. And we'll start that this week.
I like that.
And now I have like a whole hour or so of just me going over basketball topics. I know this one is kind of more of an inspirational, a general little bit podcast, but I really want to lock in on bringing my basketball knowledge to the front and center. So starting sometime this week, be on the lookout for the Basketball Blueprint with Gabe Blair, and I'll put something in the comments about it as well.
Basketball Blueprint.
The Basketball Blueprint with Gabe Blair. Tune in, all right?
Right.
Besides that, last thing in sports I want to touch on is the NBA playoffs start tomorrow.
Right. I didn't see all of the play-ins, but I think Golden State and LA are in the play-ins on the West. I don't know who's in the play-in for the East, but honestly, it's been a really interesting season.
So
it's been really competitive, man.
So you know I'm all with it. So in the East, the tournament is like this. Number one is Boston. Number two is the Knicks. Got the number two seed. Number three.
Oh, wait, who's number two?
The New York Knicks are the number two seed in the East.
I know you liar, bro. I swear. That's crazy. Look, bro, I know I follow basketball enough, but there's no way I would have missed the Knicks being number two.
The Knicks won there. I mean, it was a close race at the end because it was almost like a 3 or 4 way tie. And with the Knicks, the Bucks are the 3 seed, the Cavaliers are the 4 seed, Magic are the 5th seed, Pacers are the 6th seed. It was almost a 4 or 5 way tie the last 2 or 3 games of the season with them 4 teams. And the Knicks end up winning and getting the 2 seed. So you got them 6 in, but you know now they got the play-in tournament. And for the play-in tournament on the east side, you got the Bulls and the Hawks are playing to face the Celtics. And you got the Heat and the Sixers are playing. Wait. What?
The Celtics that got a play-in?
No. The play-in teams are playing to play the Celtics because the Celtics are the number one
seed. Oh, got you.
Yeah, right. So you got the 4 teams in the play-in. That's the Heat, the Sixers, the Hawks, and the Bulls. They're in the play-in tournament. And on the west side, you got OKC is number one, Denver number two, T-Wolves number three, Clippers number four, Dallas number five, Suns number six. And then you got the play-in tournament is the Pelicans and the Lakers are playing or in the play-in tournament, and the Kings and the Golden State Warriors in the play-in tournament. So that's getting picked up. The play-in tournament actually starts tomorrow. And from there, we'll figure out who's going to be seated where. But I'm excited about the NBA playoffs. I'm a really, really big NBA fan, and I just can't wait because, honestly, in the NBA, that's pretty much like the most important time in the playoffs. I think those guys, they got like so many games they play that they don't really give it their all every game during the regular season. So come playoff time, it's pretty much the best basketball in the world. So that's exciting.
That's where they make their money.
Yeah, that's where they make their money at. I ain't going to lie about that. So that's my sports take for the day. And let's finish with some quotes and some mindful moments and get out of here.
All right, man, let's do it.
All right. So you got the quotes today or I do?
I got the quotes today. All right. Okay. So the first one is I just feel like this quote is kind of indicative to change. You know, I know we touched on that earlier, but it was more or less along the lines of it's impossible for a man to learn something he thinks he already knows. And that coincides with change. So I'll give my quick interpretation on what I think that means. And then, you know, I'll get you to chime in. And that is that every man is right in his own mind, meaning that we all believe that what we're doing is right and just because it's what we're doing. Right. And if we're in a position to be able to, you know, execute a certain thing in a certain arena, or I'll give you an example, say the way you're supposed to, like when it comes to like playing ball, you know, it's like, you know, you're not like the way that you do it isn't the only way, but it's because you do it, you think that's the best way to go about doing it until someone showed you something better. You know what I'm saying? So every man is right in his own mind, and you can't teach a man something he thinks he already knows.
Yeah. No, that's spot on, because I was just thinking about my training and the way I develop players. And one thing I say to myself is that I can't really teach you something that I don't know how to do. I'm not able to impart knowledge that I do not have to you because I don't know how to do something. So I think that quote, if you kind of reverse it, it's just kind of like you're limited by what you know or what you don't know. It just depends on where you at in the game. But it's impossible for a man to learn something he thinks he already knows. That's just a closed fist can't receive, it can only give. And sometimes you need to receive some stuff, so you got to open your hand. But if you never open your hand, you can never receive. So that's indicative of just being a master at life. I think the most successful people, the most interesting people, or the people who are just sponges. These are the people that's the curious, the people who want to learn more, and they can learn from anybody. So in order to learn from anybody, you got to be willing to put your previous thoughts and assumptions to the side and allow for new information to come and permeate the exactly. person that you are. So I like that.
100%. 100%. Yeah. All right. So the last quote I got is, what we don't change, we choose. Kind of going back into that whole theme of, you know, change and some things we brought earlier. But what we don't change, we choose. And I feel like that's kind of self-explanatory. You get put in a position where you get the multiple choice question. And after you get it wrong the first time, you continuously choose the same answer, knowing that it's wrong. But you just like that answer so much. And that's essentially what that means to me is, what we don't change, we choose. Meaning that after you do it the first time and you've learned the lesson, but you continue to choose down that path, whether it's to, you know, self-improvement or, you know, moving in a direction for your career or your life or whatever makes sense to you and how you choose to operate, the moment you realize you're choosing the same thing, then it's never going to change.
Yeah, I mean, that made me think about politics right when you said that. And I'm not gonna be in my soapbox about voting, but in theory, it's kind of like the people who don't vote choose for whatever outcome they get. They may think that by not voting, they're getting like, okay, if I don't vote, I'm taking a stand and being like, I don't want X person to be there. But by not having a side, you're picking a side by default. And that's what a lot of our country is banking on a lot of times, what businesses and politics and stuff like that, is that they want to cause so much confusion that you get paralyzed and don't stand for anything. And by not standing for anything, you're falling for the okey-doke or whatever it is that they want to give you. So, yeah. That's another
analysis one. Paralysis, man.
Right.
Or decision fatigue, you know?
Yeah. All right. So, and let's finish this right here with our mindful moments. I know you got, you had a couple weeks to think about this. Typically, I go first, but maybe you got something for us today.
Mindful moments. I do have one because me and Raj had a lot of mindful moments. Just kind of over the past couple of weeks, trying to figure out which one to land on. I think one of my mindful moments for the past that I had over the past 7 days was understanding the importance of my influence. Right? And seeing the results in real time when it comes to caring for my son. So I want to say we were at a park or it was something, you know, and it was a moment where, it's a mindful moment to me, but he kind of did something. So the thing that he did is he put his hands on another kid. We were at the park, and the kid was spraying water on him. He told the kid to stop. The kid didn't listen, so he slapped him, right? And it's like, I don't want him to put his hands on anyone. But the reason that's a mindful moment is because he set a boundary, a person crossed his boundary, and he executed something that he felt was necessary, you know? Right. And in my mind, I'm like, all right, listen, I don't want you to be out here putting your hands on people. But at the same time, I appreciate you kind of stood on what you felt was important to you. Like, hey, I said don't spray me with water, and you didn't listen to me. So this is what I got to do next.
Right.
So.
Hey, stand on business.
Appreciate it. But in the moment, I had to be serious. I had to have a serious face. The kid's mom's coming over looking at me like, you see what your son did to mine? I'm like, nah, what happens? Like, he's got a red mark on his face. I'm like, that's crazy. And I bring both of the boys together. As soon as I stand up, the lady's tone changes. It's really interesting. But I bring the boys together and I say, Roz, did you slap this kid? He was like, yeah. I'm said, why'd you slap? He said, because he was spraying water on me. I said, did you tell him to stop? He said, I did. Then everybody looks at the other kid. And then he just turns away. And then the lady apologizes to me. Which was so funny because I didn't see it turning that way. But it was just like, listen, you know, he lets you know what he doesn't want and he wasn't going to take it. And it led to that. So I can't be mad at him. But in that space, in that moment with everyone, you know, looking at me and understanding the influence I have on him, I got to let him know, like, look, we can't do that out in public.
Right.
But when we get away from there, that's what you're supposed to, that's how you right. handle yourself if right. someone crosses your boundary like that.
Yeah. No, that's good right there. That's a good life lesson. And in public, hey, and let's act a certain way. But at the end of the day, sometimes you do got to stand on business, and that means,
bro, you got to cross that line. Yeah. Somebody cross that line, you got to get them back on their side.
Right. Okay. Well, mindful moment for me was my daughter had a volleyball tournament this weekend. We were in Kentucky playing, and I don't know how she's progressing very fast as far as her ability. And she's playing in a league that it's like the number one team in the country is in her league. So it gets pretty intense. It's really good volleyball. It's fun to watch, and she competes hard most of the time. So that was a situation where she first game she played, she didn't play with the energy that you would play with if you say you want to be one of the best players. So after the game, I pulled her to the side. Because she had like two more games that day, I pulled her to the side and I pretty much told her, like, I mean, you tell me that you won X, Y, and Z, and this is your chance to like to show how bad you want it, and right now you're not showing it, which it happens sometimes. But this is what I need you to do. I need you to just be more active. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be the best player out there, but you need to bring the most energy and care the most. And I said a few colorful words like during this, but we got that kind of relationship. And then the next game, she played probably as hard as she ever played. And in the midst of her playing as hard, she had got injured. She got hurt and not injured. And when she got hurt, it looked bad. It was kind of like all the players and the coach was like, did she tear ACL? Is she going to be all right? Like, she ain't got to play no more. So once I settled her down and we got to talking, she was like, Dad, I'm not going to not play the next game. I'm still going to play. Like, I'm fine. I just need to wrap it up, take my knee up, and I'm going to be fine. And I talked to her a little bit, and I was like, I mean, are you sure? Because I'm fine with you if you're fine. And then we checked it out. It wasn't anything that was, like, super severe. It's just that what you would call a contusion, just hitting the ground really hard, and it just hurt, pain tolerant. And then she went back out there the next game, and they had beat a team who they played two times already and lost to. And the way she played and the energy that she played with, it was very kind of inspiring and very mindful to me, because it was like I've never seen her rise to the occasion before. And not because she's not capable, because she has never been in a position to have to face that type of adversity and make the conscious decision to say, hey, look, although this happened, I'm going to respond to it like this. So it was very, very pleasing as a parent, as a trainer, as a her biggest fan, to see her see a challenge and see adversity and say, hey, look, I'm not going to fold. I'm not going to quit. As long as I can stand up and I can move, I'm going to be out there. And she was out there, and they beat the team who beat them like two or three times before. And that was a really special moment for me and for her.
The rise of the occasion.
Yes, yes. And her team played phenomenal that game too. Yeah, so.
I love that. Absolutely.
All right. Well, somehow we got to 90 minutes once again. So we'll be ending this here. But we appreciate everybody for tuning in. Yeah,
thank you. Like, subscribe, you know, follow all the good stuff and tap in, and we're going to continue to do our part and our best to give you guys some engaging content. And as we kind of move forward and figure out, you know, like really how to cement our feet, I feel like we're going to want more engaging, like back and forth, probably go live from time to time, do like a Q&A and open up the floor in that type of, you know, perspective.
Yep. And remember that the Basketball Blueprint with Gabe Blair will be coming out sometime this week. So stay tuned for that.
That's right.
I'm excited, right, to Basketball really give Blueprint. My insight on what I've been spending my whole life doing in sports and bringing value to you guys in that way. And with that being said, without further ado, we appreciate everybody tuning in. And let's find time to do it again. Peace.
Find time, baby.